You are listening to Surprise Expectations of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast.
Episode 106 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October the 6th, 2013. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my non-furloughed brother, James Furlough.
That's right. Still got a job. And I couldn't help but notice that you're coming in quite clear from China right now.
Exactly. I am coming in clear from China. I'm not in China, as a matter of fact. I'm still in Merca.
Rumors were flying that you might be broadcasting from China this week.
Yeah, rumors were flying, and I'm not, thankfully, because it would have been crazy. It was just it would have been a bad reason to go. I would not have been very successful if I had went, and I wasn't needed at all, which would have been even more frustrating if I had actually ended up going. So I didn't go. I didn't have to go, and it was good.
Cool. You're here. Yeah. I love it.
Definitely. But it is one of those weeks where everybody takes double notice of our name, which is always fun.
Yes.
Furlough. Like Furlough.
Search. I should see if our webpage visits are up. Interesting.
Probably is.
I get the feeling that Google's smart enough to know.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's the worst part about our name is that it gets deprioritized under the UGHs, which is messed up. We're more important than that, Google. Get your act together.
Seriously, it's just the government.
Jeez.
We're talking about the future.
Yeah, we're not here this week to talk about the stupid government shutdown and whatnot, or the smart government shutdown, depending on your political bent. I meant stupid as in it's obviously, no matter what take you have on it, it's less important than what we're talking about, which is what we talk about every week, which is technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure that he wants to throw out there to all you listeners so you know what context to take his comments in.
Yeah, pay attention. This is super important. I work for HP.
Hughie Packard.
Yes, that's right. I'm not furloughed. I still work for HP. But I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Boom. Good to know. If you'd like to follow us throughout the week and see all sorts of cool updates and pictures and stuff, we're all over the interwebs. If you want to go and see cool pictures from me at the San Diego Zoo, spelled S-A-N-D-Y space E-G-G-O. I thought that was clever. I don't know if anybody else thought it was clever, but, I feel like I'd been saying it like that forever. San Diego. I would make sure that there's a gap there.
It's just you.
Okay. Oh my. Dan, I hate that.
It's okay.
Anyways, if you want to follow the stuff on, thank you. If you want to see our stuff for like the Twitter and the Instagram and that sort of thing, my Twitter account is at Matthew D. Furlough. My Instagram is nextweekin4. This is usually where you give us our weekly update on how much of Ender's Game your wife has or hasn't read.
Yeah. Which actually, this will have an effect on us. No, it won't. I'll be back home by Sunday evening. But we're headed up to visit family next weekend. I'm fairly certain, 90% certain I'm showing up. I just need to tell someone I won't be at the football game. Anyways, so it's like a 5-hour drive, and so we're going to listen to it on the way up. And I'm pretty—I don't think we'll finish it on the way up, but we'll definitely finish it on the way back down. So,
okay.
So it'll be good. It's only like 11 hours total.
That's true.
We'll finish it.
I'm gonna reread it. I grabbed it. I'm ready.
It's
to
good.
Do that.
It's good.
Time to go.
I enjoy it just as much the second time around. You know, like most good stuff, you catch more the second time. You're like, oh yeah.
It's been a long, long, long time since I've read it, so I'm looking forward to it.
You love it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm stoked. Anyways, what's your if I wanted to follow you out?
You wanted to, jamesfurlough.com.
Cool, jamesfurlough.com. And if you want to get more information about the show, like our personal profiles or the clicks and links throughout the show, videos that we talk about, and websites that we talk about, cool infographics that we show. Did you see that, speaking of infographics, did you see that XKCD this week about infographics?
yes, and then I saw you shared it on my wall, and I reshared it on one of my coworkers' walls who does a lot of data stuff, to which he was like, LOLs.
LOLs, yeah, man. That is worth going to check out. It is funny, because basically he's complaining about how awful infographics can be at conveying information, where people just do it because it's a cool idea, but they're very bad at it. Anyways, if you want to see cool stuff like that, go to furloughbros.com, because that's where all those clicks and links are going to end up. Don't just listen to our elegant description of, as we paint you a picture with our words, of the images. Since we're not very good at that, go to the website and actually, we'll let the screen you're looking at paint the picture of the picture. That's my recommendation.
Anyways, good recommendation.
Thank you. Grazie.
Speaking of painting a picture.
Yes.
Facebook is now doing a better job of painting a picture of your history.
Mm-hmm.
And making that painting searchable. So this falls under the why did it take so long, but I'm glad it's finally here category. And I think this will take us all 30 seconds to talk about. But Facebook's graph search now includes posts and status updates.
That's...
Again, you would have like...
I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever used graph search. So it was shocking to me to realize that it didn't have your posts and status.
Well, that was...
I mean
there have been times where usually it's like someone shared a cool link, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's in my Facebook thing somewhere. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. And then you start scrolling and you're like, man, this person shares a lot.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's way down there. Or I've shared something and been like, oh, yeah, I shared that on Facebook. What was that again? I'm like, oh, my gosh.
9 months ago. Oh, no.
Like, I'm looking it up on the calendar trying to be like, when did I share? Okay, it was about that time and I'm following the timeline. So, and now you just search for it and it should find it.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Infinitely more useful.
Infinitely. That's
infinite. Infinite.
Infinite. Without finiteness.
Yes.
Really what we're trying to get at. There's limitless usefulness. That's
That's to say it was zero, and now it's more than zero.
Yes.
I think that's undefined. But that's
you say that's sort of a division by zero situation where it's, you know. Yeah, which is technically it depends on the context, the mathematical context. Is it undefined or is it infinite? It really depends on the usefulness.
It's infinite in this case.
Yeah. It's funny. I once asked my teacher, you know, why is 1 divided by 0 equal to infinity? And he said, well, how many zeros would it, you know, if you think about it, like what's 2 divided by 4? What's 4 divided by 2? Well, it's 2. How many 2s would it take to make 4? Well, 2. What's 9 divided by 3? He goes, well, how many zeros by that logic would it take to make 1? 0 over 1. I was like, I don't know. He goes, well, you know, nearly infinite, if not infinite. I was like, oh, actually makes now some sense. I'm not sure it should or not. I'm not sure it would stand up against the rigorous debate. That was Mr. Manchester, for those of you who have any memory of... Yes, yeah, I knew you would enjoy that. Oh, yeah, Mr. Manchester, okay. Yeah, it makes sense that that's who would say that.
Seriously.
He's a goofy dude. Smart dude, but a goofy dude. Anyway.
Good teachers are. This next one, keeping on the social network vein, has to do with Snapchat.
Oh, baby.
Have you seen their next big thing?
Yes. Took quite a bit of amusement for me. Oh, man. It was awesome. Tell us about it, and I'll tell you my story.
All right. And I want to hear this. So Snapchat has come out with stories, okay? Which I actually think this is kind of a cool concept. And I did some, in case you didn't catch that.
So we're not friends on Snapchat, are we?
I thought we were. We totally are. We've got to be. I've sent you Snapchats before, man.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's true.
So while I'm talking, you can look it up so that you can give your impressions of my amazingly exciting day. So anyway, stories is an idea where, okay, so the original concept of Snapchat is you take a picture or a video,
yes,
you send it to a subset of your friends,
yes,
and you, you know, you set it for a finite amount of time, they look at it for that amount of time, and that's gone forever, unless they take a screenshot of it, in which case then they have it for a little longer. Excuse me. So Snapchat now has this thing called Stories, where essentially you take a picture or video, and instead of sharing it with select friends, you say, put this on my storyboard, I think is what they're calling it. And what it does is it then makes this picture available or video for 24 hours to all of your friends. And then what's neat about it is, so you, let's say you take one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one in the evening. You go and say, go to my Snapchat thing, and you can see them, and you see them in that order, morning, afternoon, evening of the first day. And it's for, and what I missed at first is, you know, if you say like for 8 seconds, which is normally what I like to do, because that's enough time to really, to take it in and, you know, not be like, what was that? It'll show up for like 8 seconds, 16 seconds, 24 seconds. So it starts to get long.
Yeah.
But the idea is it pulls this story every day together. And then what's cool about it is, let's say that the next morning I take another photo, okay?
Yeah.
And then you look at it again. It only goes back 24 hours. So in this case, it would be the afternoon, the evening, and then morning of day two. And so they're like, first, A, it's not reverse chronological like Facebook.
Right.
So it always, you know, goes oldest to newest, but it only goes back 24 hours. And it'll be interesting to see if they extend that at all, but I don't think they would. So you can then, when you look at your list of friends, like you should see from mine, it's like I got a semicircle,
right,
a bunch of pies, which are just snippets of, you know, it's hard to see in my opinion. But, you know, if I've got just one, it's one picture. If I got two, it's two halves. If I got three, it's three quarters. No, it's three-thirds.
I'm going to say, what?
with a missing piece for the mystery time.
We're getting mathematical here, man.
Yeah, I know. It's late. So anyways, so that's the basic idea. So I took some photos. What did you think?
It was good. It was very Snapchattable in its form. I liked it.
Yeah. And so again, it sounds like it's still two way, right? We have to friend each other. You can't follow me, on Twitter, which I think has a limited use case as a result of that. But you know, that's fine. You know, in terms of like the idea that they threw out was someday like celebrities could do these Snapchat stories of their days, because for some reason they have interesting lives and we don't. But
yeah, they don't. But whatever.
Yeah.
Just because they're rich and beautiful doesn't mean they have interesting lives and we don't.
Yeah,
okay?
They might.
I mean, it's a good, if you're looking for a recipe for an interesting right, those are some good ingredients to start with. But
yeah, whatever. But anyways, so that's stories right there. It's creating a very, very, very short temporary timeline, essentially. But it still has the temporary feel, just not quite as temporary as it used to be.
So Thursday night, I decided to went out with some friends and some girls that I've become good friends with over the last year, and one of our cousins, and we're all going out and just having a good old time. Went and got some this place called the Boiling Crab, where they, guess what, boil crabs,
lobsters.
And, they do lobsters. Okay. They do shrimp, but the
fish
weird part
chips?
Was it, the weird part, no. The weird part about this place is it's like all boiled crawfish type things, and you got to break it out. So like their shrimp, they have the shrimp is totally there, and so you have to like peel it all off, and it's disgusting. Shrimp are gross in their like normal form. If you, I don't know, like this is a unique opinion, but I think they're disgusting with their little faces and their little arms. Like, I want just the meat, man, pre-clean. Anyway, so we went out and I was harassing this one of the girls that was with us about the fact that she doesn't Snapchat me anymore. I'm like, what the heck? Why don't you, like, I used to get Snapchats from you all the time. But the thing is about it is, and I didn't make this mention that evening, and I don't mind saying this now because she doesn't listen. She should, but she doesn't. But she's like ridiculously like lame Snapchat stuff. Like, what is this? Like, why are you sharing this with me? But it's just nice to be thought of, you know, that's all I want. I want you to take a picture and share with me. Is that too much to ask? Well, so she sort of like, you know, okay, spurred on, decided to take a Snapchat picture and share with everybody. And, this is obviously after the stories have come out. She didn't like, hadn't watched the video, kind of just on what it was, explaining it or anything. So she just clicked it as a story and shared it with everybody. And we didn't really know, think twice of anything. And and we're sitting there, and like 20 minutes later, like her sister goes, "Oh, I got your Snapchat." She watches it, and it's just this dumb picture. And she goes, "Oh, that's cool. You can watch it again." And again, and again, yeah. And all of a sudden, Danae goes, "What?" She was like, "Yeah, you can watch it again." So watch this, and she watches it again. I was like, "Oh, weird. Can I watch it again?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that's cool. I can watch it again too." So what? But and she was like, "Oh, does it keep doing that?" I was like, "Well, maybe it replaces the last one." Or the last one, the third one, and she was like, "Okay, maybe." And so she ended up with like a chain of like three, and she's stupid ones. And she was like she was like, "Oh my gosh!" And so she was just like freaking out. She's like, "This is the worst thing ever. Why would you do this? What are they doing? I hate this company." Like, just totally frustrated. Man. Oh, it's hilarious. You do not know what you're doing with that. With like, you don't know what it is. Oh man, I don't want to sneak up and bite you. Especially since so many people, you know, do share that as for stupid stuff.
But it's only for 24 hours, so, you know.
Yeah, seriously. But it's pretty awesome. It was funny, man. I was like, nice job, Snapchat. Freaking out your customer base by, like, the number one thing about it is that it's gone. So if you do something stupid, it's okay. And if you're not paying attention,
they're just evolving, you know?
It's true.
I think it's cool, interesting.
It is cool. No. It is cool. It is interesting. I'm glad for the company because, let's be honest, it's kind of a weird product and sort of has a short shelf life to begin with. So they've got to evolve it and make it better, but it's funny.
I could definitely see that as something that other networks take into account, where it's part of your profile. You got your timeline and that's your normal deal and you got your updates, but it's like, if you go to a profile, there's a, I don't know what you call it, but like an overview, right? Where just real quick, let's flash the latest things you've done.
Yeah.
So they can catch up with you real quick. Cause they used to say that was the deal with Facebook, right? It was, how do you, instead of calling your friends or texting them to be like, "Hey, well, how are you doing? What's up?" You just go to their profile page and look at it and go, "Oh, okay, here's what's up. Here's what they've been doing." And then you might comment or poke them or something.
That seems so depressing to me.
Well,
nowadays.
And it definitely feels like they've gotten away from that, right?
Yeah.
People don't use it that way. But that's the way that Snapchat was like, yeah, this is now you can see what your friends have been up to in the last 24 hours and, you know, via pictures and stuff.
The nice part about that, too, is that it used to be really and truly, I only go to Snapchat if I get an alert, whereas this is really designed to get me to show up like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. This is designed to get me to show up to see, hey, did something happen? You know, and go, take it from that perspective as opposed to one of, you know, where it's very passive.
Yeah, I'm still just old enough that I don't like the fact that it's not permanent, but, you know, but that's just me.
Yeah.
It will be like, oh, what the heck, I'm bored, I'll take a picture. You know, in 24 hours it'll be gone, no big deal, that gives me something to do. I could see that, but I don't see it as replacing Instagram by any means, you know,
right.
at all. But then with Instagram, I can take other photos and filter them and do all sorts of.
Well, and it's funny. I use it as a I'm sharing an picture with a person, you know, and
yeah.
That's kind of the strategy that I take with it. You know, it's whereas if I want it to be permanent, I'm gonna hang it on a wall or I'm gonna hide it from the world, and you know, just want it to be permanent, and I'm gonna keep it on my phone. But
the other interesting thing was that they were, you know, interviewing the creators and or the founders.
How old are they?
Evan Spiegel is
23. Okay, I hate that. Oh my gosh.
I know.
Oh, it's bad enough that I'm getting older than some of the NFL like stars, but it's.
Oh, I know.
You know, but that the billionaire like you know whiz kids are significantly younger than me.
I can't remember if I'm older or younger than Zuckerberg. We're like within 6 months of each other, and I'm always just like, yeah, that's not me.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah,
that's
Colin okay. Kaepernick, the star and quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, I didn't know. I was stuck in a friggin' traffic jam. But he's 25. I'm 27. What have I done with my life, man?
And he looks like a man, to be honest.
I know. Seriously. Oh, jeez.
He could beat us both up.
Oh, dude.
Together at the same time.
Yeah.
Not individually, just together.
Yeah. Like, yeah, both of us armed with swords. He
well, I'd like to think I'd do okay if I had a sword and he didn't.
Yeah, well, I'm not putting it past him, though. That guy's a beast. He's got a long reach, man.
That's true.
And he's fast. Oh, man.
Now, the trick is you can't compare yourself to others. That's the second you do that, you're going down a hole because either you're better or worse, and either way it turns to pride or jealousy, and that's not good. But this is not a sermon, despite it being Sunday. But anyways, the cool part about the talk with this 23-year-old is, when you talk to Zuckerberg, you know, he's got like these, he seems to imply this inherent like insight into the psyche of human beings and relationships. You know what I'm talking about?
Right, yeah.
He's like, oh, yes, I've got this thing, I've called it like the sharing principle, or what is it? Where sharing is going to double each year. He's got his own like whatever's.
His own Moore's law of.
Yeah, Zuckerberg's law essentially of sharing. And it's got this real heady thing. Where these guys, which part of it's they're 23, they're like, no, we don't know anything special about human beings. This is just something we think would be cool and people would like, and so we're gonna try it.
You know, it seems that
now they did hire what's this guy's name? They did hire a guy. Oh, I can't remember, and I don't think it's on here. It probably is somewhere. But they hired this guy where he is essentially a sociologist. Psychologist type thing. He studies human beings and relationships. So like, yeah, we brought him on board because we don't know what we're doing.
Right. And,
you know, so he helps them kind of think through what are real life interactions. But which, I mean, I get it, right? It's like, it helps to answer the question, oh, what have you been doing lately? You tend to go, oh, well, let me tell you about the last 24 hours. And, you know, we tend to do recent events and they chose 24 hours.
But, it seems kind of like writing.
Snapchat, check it out.
So
I will probably never use stories again. So
that's kind of my feeling on it. I'm not super stoked for it. It's not going to change.
We're not in the target market, you know. That's just
I don't know. Okay. Let's. I'll let it slide. We'll see what happens. So so there's this cool little new toy that's going to be coming out. Everybody seems to be coming out with their own version of something like this, but the big dogs are starting to throw in, which is exciting because what it means is that there's definitely something going on. But Intel has decided to launch a new little product, which is basically a Arduino compatible. Raspberry Pi competitor. It's a chip. It uses a single core of their which core is it?
Haswell?
No. This is super low powered. This is like one of their Sirion. They're not Sirion. What are those?
X1000.
Yeah, the core
Galileo
system on a chip X1000. I thank you for just words. Yeah throwing out names. It's a 32-bit single core single threaded processor running up to speeds of 400 megahertz. The board is Windows, Mac OS, and Linux compatible. It's software compatible with Arduino Shield ecosystems and supports 3.3 to 5 volt shields featuring Ethernet USB ports. So basically what's been going on in the field of these microprocessors, Arduino has been out there for a while, and it's a little microcontroller type thing. Basically it's got inputs, outputs, and timing circuits, and you program it and you can do all sorts of cool things. But one of the big things that's been coming out lately has been the idea of taking these cool, you know, you got these systems on the chips that run computers or phones really, but can kind of run computers, and like the Raspberry Pi, these very small little things, and then you've got the Arduinos, and they kind of seem like they could fit together into one cool little package. And so a bunch of companies have been coming out with it's Kickstarter projects, one that I invested in actually. With these solutions where they're basically, it's a system on a chip, it's a complete computer, it's got an HDMI output, it's got a USB, it's got Ethernet and everything, it's like a Raspberry Pi, but it's also got the Arduino digital input outputs built right onto it so that it works like an Arduino. And what's cool about this is that it's turning, you know, you can work as a central computer, and a lot of inventors and hobbyists are trying to play around with it, and it's been getting a lot of attention. But like I said, what's exciting about this is that Intel has decided to throw in and really, make some big moves with this, which is a pretty big deal. And the fact that it'll run Windows, Mac OS X, and Linux is very cool. Because Linux is the big one, and once you kind of run all of those, there's very few limitations before it can run a Delvik engine and run Android, and so there's all sorts of cool new features that are going to be coming out with all this stuff. And the idea of these integrated computers with digital inputs and outputs just becoming par for the course. Everybody can do it, and it's pretty exciting. Oh, I'm excited about it because it's the kind of thing I'm into. Robotics, man.
Are you going to get one?
Oh, almost certainly.
Almost certainly.
Who
says it'll be competitive. So what does that mean? Price.
Well,
priced. What is that?
The Raspberry Pis, and Arduino probably about $50 to $70, something like that. Probably on the higher end of that because Intel.
That's so cheap.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. It's dirt cheap. I mean, and the Raspberry Pis are like I think you can get them for 40 to 60 pounds, which comes out to like $60 to $100.
So if it's anywhere in the realm of $100, it's competitive and.
What?
At a price where you're right. I mean, that's kind of like, if you've got any interest at all in tinkering or any side idea, yeah, just pick one up. You don't even think about it.
Yeah. I got more than I know what to do with. I got four Arduinos sitting around here. I've got more coming every day, it feels like, which is exciting because they're fun to play with and have them talk to each other and work with. But
that's a level of expertise that I know nothing about.
Yeah.
And I'm a little jealous, but
you know, it's I'll be honest, it's not that hard once you could learn it. It's not that bad. There's a couple of, and especially now that I've had to kind of teach it to myself, I know stumbling blocks better. So I'm just saying, if anybody's interested, man, I am a resource.
I guess I need to find a use, you know, like what's a good reason to buy one and do something with it. Like, for example, here's one. Tell me if this is possible. Okay. We'll just throw this one out here. So I own a bicycle.
Yes.
And my wife owns a bicycle, and they're taking up space in the garage.
Yes.
And so I've had this brilliant idea, because it is brilliant. What we're going to do is, and I've already bought all the materials, and I've just been too lazy to do it, but whatever. We're going to put a board across the top of our garage with some pulleys and some hooks, and I've made sure to get all the weights right and everything. And essentially, we're going to be able to attach our bikes to these hooks, pull them on up, and then, you know, tie them down like you would a boat line. So our bikes will be suspended up in the air, off the ground, out of the way, you know, high enough so you can't so you can walk underneath them and not bonk your head.
Right.
It's going to be awesome. But there's pulling required to make this thing happen.
Yes.
So
pulling on the pulleys.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, whatever. First world problem. But is that something where I attach a little winch to it, and instead of flipping a button, I somehow use my phone? Or is that just like some way over the top, that doesn't even make sense type thing to use with this? I guess I'm trying to think like – and then my other idea was, okay, I've got a garage door, which is – you know, I have to open manually, and that'd be nice to not have to open it manually. Of course.
Am
I thinking too small?
So where this would really show this, where something like this would be really cool is like, let's say you've got two limits. You got an up position, a down position, and you have a motor, right? And you got a motor that all it does is drive forward or drive backwards.
Okay.
And what you do is with this little controller, you say, you've got a button where you say go up, and you got a button that says go down. And essentially, what will happen is you hook it up, you hook your bike on, you hit the button go up, and it'll start pulling it up, and it'll keep running it until it hits the up position switch. It'll lock in place. And then you can hit down, and it'll go down until it hits the down position. So instead of you having to sit there and monitor it and keep track of it, you can walk away from it, and it'll do that for you. And the big thing is depending on what you buy, and this is becoming more and more common, yeah, you can hook it up to the Ethernet or Bluetooth or whatnot and control it from a website, and, you know, basically, so
I think I want to go for a bike ride. Let me lower my bike so I walk into the garage.
Exactly. And that's and that's the kind of the direction it's going. Yeah. I mean, and it's like, for me, you know, I use them for, you know, controlling. You know, you can do all sorts of LED display stuff. You can do,
actually a better use talking about that. I think for me personally, we've got a garden, would be to put some sort of moisture sensor in the ground. And it's whenever it's no longer moist, run the water
right
until it's moist. Right.
That's, yeah.
And during the rainy season, it theoretically will never run, and it'll just do it during the summer. And I don't ever have to worry about watering them.
Which is
anymore.
Fantastic for those 3 weeks of the year that it's not raining.
Hey, you know what? It's closer to four.
Which is, you know, I get that, man.
Is a lot, right? That's like a quarter more, so that's important.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. So, yeah, very cool. I'm excited for it.
Ah, okay. All right. I'm a little more excited. I'll think about. I've got a little time, but eventually some sort of home automation thing, at least for me, would be very relevant.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I looked it up. My Lockitron is due like November, December, so I'm going to go with December. So I'm hoping an early Christmas present. Originally it was October. Now it's a little longer. How I love startups. That's so fantastic.
Yeah,
but it's okay. I got my Pebble, and I love it, and we'll be talking about other smartwatches later in the show. But yeah, home automation I think is cool, is a cool use case, and so it's something. It's the combination of a motor and a sensor is really where it gets powerful, and it's just a question of, you know, getting the right sensors to control the motor, and then you know, obviously having remote access is another cool feature. You know, send me an alert, right? Watering the garden right now, fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So a couple of crazy things happened this week. It's actually a good week for, like, wow, I didn't see that coming news. Well, and a little bit of, I did see that coming news, I guess. So what do you want to start with? Do you want to start with the, I didn't see that coming news, or the, I totally saw that coming news?
I don't care. Let's start with the first one.
Which is that I didn't see that coming news. So, okay. I got two news stories. First off, the Silk Road got shut down.
Oh, bummer.
I know. I hate it when my Silk Roads get shut down. Have you been following that story at all?
Is that the Bitcoin drug one?
Yeah, the Bitcoin drug one.
Okay, that's as much as I know.
Now catch me up. With the rest of the story, essentially basically what was going on was this dude decided to create an anonymous Amazon-type venue where you could buy and sell goods and services.
Goods and services.
anonymously and in an untraceable manner. And this is all done in the this is all done over the internet. But some of the goods and services that were traded amongst things like, I'm sure they were selling and buying monitors and books and pants, but they were also selling cocaine and heroin and guns and hit services and things.
Really, hit services? Wow.
Yeah. Well, this is awesome.
That's amazing.
Don't worry. This is a.
Drugs thing, and I understand the monitors and whatever.
Well, that's the thing, is they weren't really selling monitors. That was not one of the big big uses. It was like, but it was like billions of dollars a year. The big three were guns, drugs, and illegal activities, illicit activities. It was one of those places where it's like you hear about, you know, every time you hear about like something's been broken and a million username passwords have been stolen.
Yeah.
And you wonder like, well, who goes and uses those million usernames and passwords? Well, they get sold somewhere. This is one of the places they got sold. Or when somebody creates a botnet and they want to, you know, I want to use a botnet. I want to use 1,000 computers to, I don't know, to launder money through a cancer donation website.
I don't even think that kind of stuff.
I know. That's what's so crazy about this. But it's like, well, where would you go to buy that much computer use time of a botnet?
If only I had a botnet, I could totally do this.
This is great. I could launder all my meth drug money.
Man,
I'm hoping that nobody else is in the middle of season 3 of Breaking Bad, or man, did I just upset you?
I'm going to start it later. I am going to start it after I finish the Star Trek series, so don't spoil it for me.
All right. Okay. Cool.
Total side related topic here.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take you on the tangent because I can. Okay. My wife got this email last week that apparently.
She's got a relative in Saudi Arabia who's got a bunch of money for it.
But it feels similar to it. Apparently, the city of Albany has given away her email address. Apparently, there was this individual citizen in Albany who requested the email addresses of the citizens of Albany. And so... Albany decided.
Freedom of Information Act thing?
Yeah, kind of. He goes, you're a public utility company, whatever, organization. Therefore, any information that you collect is therefore public information, and I should have access to said public information. Now, what's interesting about what's interesting about this is what's that guy called? The city prosecutor person? You know, like the top lawyer dude. Whatever. It's the guy Harvey Two-Face, whatever his position was in Batman. What was that?
Prosecutor. He was the main prosecutor.
District
Attorney?
Right. Yes, thank you. The District Attorney.
The DA.
The DA, yeah. Ruled that in some cases, yes, the city of Albany has to give up the email addresses because... Like, for example, with me, I gave the utility company my email address so they could contact me. But the Parks and Rec service also gets your email address so they can communicate with you. I did not get the email, but my wife did, because apparently for the utility stuff, they have the little liner that says your information will be kept confidential. But here's the crazy part. The Parks and Rec is supposed to... but never updated their forms to include it. And so since it wasn't on the forms, they now have to give it up, which I thought was what was really interesting about it was they said there were 5 criteria, and it had to meet all 5 criteria in order for it to not be given up. And so like one of them was the signer or the person who gave it has to be given it a free will. So I'm like, oh, that's – give me a situation where it's not free will giving up my email. But, you know, whatever. We'll let that one go. And then it was number two was something like it has to have the warning sign on the paper. Number three, it would do the individual harm if their email was given away. Number four, the intent for it to be private had to be there. And I don't even remember what the fifth one was. But it was interesting was that all five of the criteria had to be met, not just like one of the five. Because I would have been like, okay, let's say that you didn't say that it was confidential and that you had no intention of it being confidential, but giving it up would do me harm. To me, that sounds like a great reason not to give it
right.
up.
Right, yeah, seriously.
But apparently it has to – I was like, I think it's supposed to be an or, not an and. And yeah. So I messed up there on the clerical side. But, you know, whatever. The point is, apparently, because they didn't fill it out, Jesse, my wife, her email has now been given to this individual to give it for it. And what was super interesting is that she got this email that said, sorry, we had to give it up.
Wow.
If you don't want it given up in the future, click this button and we'll put you on our no distribution, keep confidential list.
That's
just like, wow, that's
awesome.
Crazy. I just like, I don't understand it. Because there's a part of me that's like, okay, fine. This guy gets the email addresses. He still is not allowed to email them because he still needs to get opt-in permission to send them emails no matter how he gets their list, unless he's planning on selling it, which turns out he's kind of a major activist in the city the more I've learned about him and what he does. And so I think he's going to use it to try to communicate to people to, you know, get them all riled up.
Which is obnoxious.
Which I'm like, it's illegal. It's not even obnoxious. It's illegal. You're not allowed to do that. It has to be opt-in. That's the Anti-Spam Act. And, you know, but whatever. We'll see how he deals with that. And then, but I'm even still like, man, there's a part of me that's like, I wish that Albany would have stood up and been like, no, this is morally wrong. We're not going to do it. Yes, we messed up on our paperwork.
Bunch
Sorry.
Of lawyers are going to stand up for what's morally right and wrong and not what's just absolutely legal.
You know,
from a
If I were like the mayor of Albany, right, that's how I would come out and be like, no, we're not doing this. This is just wrong. Fine, I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do. We are going to set everyone as confidential, and we'll send out an email saying, hey, if you want to be put on this list where we give away your name, let us know, right? It's and have them opt in instead of opt out like they had – Jesse do, where they were like, oh yeah, send this email if you want to be taken off this list. I'm like, no, let's go the other way around. We've taken you off the list. Let us know if you want back on.
Right.
They go, okay, now you can have whatever you want. Yes, we screwed up. We're sorry. But anyways, that just has to do with this idea of selling illegal emails and super annoying. I want Albany to be great, and I think Albany can be great, and they go and do boneheaded stuff like this. You're just like, come on, guys. It's the internet. Get it right.
Yeah. Well,
anyways, maybe he's going to sell it on the Silk Road. Oh, wait, it can't anymore.
Yeah, it's true. Well, you know, kind of. I'm not done with my story yet. So basically, one of the things was they were using Bitcoin because Bitcoin's, you know, it's untraceable, whatnot, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's tradable for money. Yeah. And so this dude had been really successful, actually, in obscuring this whole thing. One of the things he was doing was using your Tors so you could surf the deep web. You could exist in the dark net, as some people called it, which is one of those things where I hate. Reporters sometimes and the media, because they hear these things like the deep net and the dark net and or the deep web and the dark net, and they're like, oh man, these things sound so cool, and they just throw them out there without any wherewithal or knowledge. And the best part about it is I love it when people will state fact. Like, this is what the dark web is, and this is what the deep web is. And you're
they read Wikipedia.
I know. Oh, yeah. See, that's what drives me
nuts. I do
that
all the time.
You sit there, and you know what? And it's like, it's fine. But like, if you have any understanding of the context of how these terms originated, you realize that a lot of this is like, there's no governing body that says this is what the darknet is and this is what the deep web is it drives me crazy. So for those of you that are wondering and are sitting there going, so what is it? Basically, this is what goes on. The deep web is, I think, most accurately described as the unindexed web, or that which hasn't been Snapchat. Touched by that. Yeah, and actually, yes, that's a pretty good way to describe it. Essentially, it's anything with an IP address, anything, any port out in the storm of the internet that does not have an indexed information with it. So anywhere where you would go and try to get, you know, an IP address,
like Facebook up until last week. Nothing was searchable, and a lot of it is not indexed by anybody because it's all private.
And that's exactly what's going on. And the thing is that when they talk about the deep web, it's like Google, Bing, Yahoo, your big, you know, dogpile. What's the one that DuckDuckGo? You know, these guys have these their search engines that have indexed the internet. They've basically gone out and they've said what's out there. And anywhere there where things are hyperlinked together, it allows them to jump from one page to the next. And that's how Google discovers stuff. And if you want it, you know, and that's how Google eventually finds pages that aren't submitted directly. And if you have a page that's not linked to anywhere, you have to submit it directly so they can crawl your web page. But it's basically there's this internet that Google searches and kind of ties a bunch of different hyperlinked networks together of web pages, and everything that's there is considered part of the internet because it's searchable. But when if you have a website like yours and I's, we both do this. When you're doing a development page, for example, it's there. You can type it in. You can type in the URL. It'll bring you exactly where it is. You can type in the IP address. You can find it. But Google can't find it because nothing links to it, and you haven't submitted it. So there's no way for Google to know it's there, or any search engine for that matter to know it's there. And that is part of the deep web. It's basically everything that is not connected or searchable under a normal, you know, surfing means.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is, and what's kind of surprising to people, is that the amount of information out there is gigantic. It's enormous. They've described it as number one, you can only estimate it. You can't actually evaluate how big it is because there's no way to search it. It's estimated that it's anywhere from 100 times to a million times bigger than what is easily searchable. I tend to think it's probably in the order of, you know, 100 to a couple hundred times bigger. But it's basically all the data, you know, web, you know, schools. Anytime schools like collect a bunch of, do a big survey, and they store all that, say, all that information, all those statistics on a server somewhere, and you can't just go and get to it by searching for it, that's the deep web. HP, all of your guys' statistics, technically the deep web. And what happened was, now is your dark net and your Tors, what those allow you to do people would say, hey, there's a lot more information out there. It'd be cool if we could actually find it. So let's set up these systems by which we can go and find these things that aren't necessarily indexed and aren't traditional Google web search type things, where we can actually go out there. And the dark net is basically a part of the unindexed internet that's tied together in through a system of the best attempt at anonymous communication using Tors a lot of times. So basically what happened was is you had this place, this unindexed part of the web that was connected by a bunch of people, very anonymous, using anonymous payment systems, where you could say, I want a pound of heroin, which is a lot of heroin. And
take your word for it.
Yes. And then and then they would show you how to, like, they would have like instructions on how to package your heroin so that drug dogs won't find it. It would just get shipped to your home address or wherever you told it to go, which is nuts, and the person would get paid in bitcoins and everybody would go along with their day happy go lucky.
Wow.
Yeah. So the FBI was not cool with this. I'm not sure why. What's your guys, stop being such, you know, Debbie Downers, guys. But the thing is that this dude who was running the Silk Road, pretty good at what he did. And they did not discover him because of his through some sort of like a backtrace or something. Huh. They didn't find him because of what he was doing on the web. Actually, one of the biggest ways that they found him was he had a few people that were working for him. Throughout various times, and one of his employees, upset him a lot. And for some reason, and nobody's quite sure on why this happened, but instead of just firing the person like most normal bosses would do, and I'm sure there's some sort of blackmail, hey, you're doing something illegal, give me money sort of thing that might have led him to this conclusion, but he decided it was a really good idea to use the Silk Road, his website, to hire a hitman to kill his employees.
Brilliant.
Yes.
That's how you get rid of somebody. Literally.
Yeah, exactly. The problem was that this hitman was shockingly not a very moral hitman and said, guess what? You just tried to hire a hitman, but I'm not really a hitman. I'm a blackmailer. And so the dude was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. So he's like, give me money or I'm going to tell everybody you try to hire a hitman. And he's like, okay, give me a little time. I'll transfer you some funds. And while he was transferring the, you know, preparing his transfer for funds, I'm using my finger quotes, he hired another hitman to try to take out the first hitman. He's just like,
brilliant.
Yeah, you're like, this is awesome, guys. This is, oh my gosh.
There's a moral somewhere in there. I can't quite put my finger on it.
And he had a couple of other real just doofus things where it was like, where he would order stuff and have them send it to off of, you know, totally illegal stuff and have them just mail it to his home address. Dude, what the heck? Okay. So eventually they were able to build out this network of figuring out who it was and kind of confirm that this was the guy that they were looking for and what he was doing. And then this last weekend they shut him down. They confiscated like $3 million worth of bitcoins, and which made the bitcoin market shrink, or the value of bitcoin go down, which is surprising to me, because I would think anytime you limit supply, like if you burn a bunch of dollar bills, doesn't that make the rest of the bills more valuable?
Well, only in the sense that, yes, as long as your confidence in the currency remains.
It was that weird fuzzy math thing.
Yeah, where people go, oh, you could just get rid of it. I don't know if I trust this as much. And
yeah,
so the demand does drop. And so,
okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, that would be the, which is what happened in the 1920s.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. Wow, that's really fascinating. That's crazy. I mean, that totally sounds fictional, and it will probably become a movie someday.
Yeah.
But because it has that intrigue and mystery about it, and it's clearly plausible. I mean, it happened. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
In a horrible way. I think it would be really cool. It's stories like these where I'm like, man, that'd be neat to be a part of, like, the FBI or whoever it is that, you know, got him. Where you're like, we're tracking it. You're tracking them down. You're following the clues. You know, I can imagine Lois Lane would be really good at this kind of thing. and you get him. You're like, yes, this is the person. We know it. We're 98% confident. They're like, you got to be more confident than that. And you're like, okay, I'm 100% confident, you know, in that meeting, that scene.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, based on this, we're going in. We're going to go get him. You know, and you're sitting it all up and,
it's good.
Yeah, I watched the movie. Make it. Whoever does it, I'll watch it.
Yeah, it definitely is going to be a movie, and it's going to be crazy. So the thing is that
I feel like the movie's already been made, really. It's just a matter of using Bitcoin versus something else. I feel like
right.
It already exists, which is probably where I got the idea on some level.
Probably. And so the reason why I say you can't, you know, we'll see what you can and can't do on the Silk Road is because a group has already gotten together and is like, don't worry, we're going to restart the Silk Road. We're just going to call it something else, but it's going to be the Silk Road 2.0, yeah.
Oh, I love
and that. It'll be more obscure and more hidden. The FBI is going to have an even harder time finding out where it is and what to do with it. So you know, don't
and
worry.
That's the part of the job where it becomes depressing because there's never really that end, like, yes, we got him. It's just fun. And the hunt continues.
Well, and especially because it's like something like that, it's not one guy who can do what nobody else can do. It's just one guy who figured out how to do it first and then showed everybody else how to do it and so has worked through all the difficulties and showed you one way that it can end poorly. Now somebody else is going to get even further because they're going to do it better. Yeah, so it's, you know, good times all around. Yay! You know.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I love it when we bring optimism and good cheer. So the other news story of the unexpected of things that we didn't see coming this week, a Tesla had a little bit of an accident. Accident. Yeah, it does happen. And Tesla's stock took a tremendous beating this week. Everybody thought at first it had something to do with the fire, but that's because people don't pay attention. Once people who do pay attention started to talk, you realized it only partly had to do with the fire. Ah. But it was a bit of a story. So did you hear anything about this?
Only that
firework?
Alien said it would have been worse had it not been a Tesla.
Yeah, well, which, you know,
I should say, but that's all I know, honestly. I know that something caught on fire.
Yes, and that something, believe it or not, was a Tesla.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I know. Shock, dismay. I
couldn't guess.
I know. It's crazy, man. So this is pretty crazy because... Sorry, I'm getting distracted for a second. So basically what happened was this dude was driving down the freeway, having a good time, minding his own business, and then he hit something, a piece of metal, of some debris, when it hit, it punctured through the bottom base plate, a piece of aluminum that protects the battery, and punctured straight through to the battery. And when that happened, the car indicated, hey, there's a problem. You should probably get off the road and sent up a couple of alerts. So he's like, okay, so he got off the road. And then the car was like, and you should probably get out of the car too. And so he was like, oh, okay, yeah. And so he jumps out of the car, and that's when it starts to smoke all around him, and then fire starts to come, and the Tesla's on fire. And then the policemen show up and they start going through their normal procedure, which is now that it's on fire, the fire department. Their normal procedure is they punch holes in the top to kind of vent it out, let it get not good airflow, but to get the fire going in the right place so they can put it out.
Okay. All right.
And then they put some water on it. Which, if you know anything about lithium burning, you should be getting a big red flag at that moment. You're like, oh, that probably didn't end well. And it didn't. So the fire got a lot bigger when they poured water on it. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's a battery pack. So then they took a fire retardant, a chemical fire retardant. They threw it on there, and it put the fire out. And then Tesla's stock price tanked like 6 points, which was exciting. And that's kind of how it was reported for a couple of days, but, it was interesting. So I thought what was interesting about this was that there's more to this story. So basically, number one, Tesla got downgraded as a stock price, on Monday or Tuesday, like the day before the fire. Basically, the evaluation is that the stock has really hit its peak. They got a huge early advantage, but now the other big boys are coming out to play. Mercedes, BMW are all coming out with electric vehicles, and it's funny. My boss is just like, it's over for Tesla. It's game over. BMW's coming out with an electric car. Mercedes coming out with an electric car. You know, now the real go-getters are going to show them how to do it. And you're like, dude, you've only heard that they've got electric cars. You've not looked at the electric cars yet, have you? Because BMW's response to Tesla is laughable. Number one, it's ugly as sin. Number two, it's got a fraction of its range. Yeah, it's crazy expensive. It's got no range. It's takes forever to recharge. It's got worse battery. It's got worse technology. What are you talking about that they're coming out to play? But the thing is that what it shows.
And furthermore, he lives in the Bay Area, and Tesla is based in the Bay Area.
Dude,
you're supposed to have blind loyalty.
Well, not to mention the fact that our company shares the same city boundaries as their company, and since they pay a lot more in taxes than we do, our roads are working because of them. I'm a big believer in Tesla's, you know, vision of the future, because it directly affects the quality of streets that I drive on. Like, let's go for it, Tesla. Let's go.
I mean, the other crazy part, right? Again, is where you live, but like you said, he's busy running a company, so he's not following the news like we are. You know, so we'll give him that. But it's like, how many times do you see when, like, oh, well, the big guys have come out with this, so,
well,
you
know, the BlackBerry,
small upstarts are done.
I say BlackBerry has come out with their response to the original iPhone, the BlackBerry Storm, and it's going to be a real iPhone killer.
Dude, remember that? Totally.
Yeah, I do remember that. I was talking about that today.
Well, it was even like Facebook was like, oh, we've come out with you know, they came out with their photos app. Oh, Instagram's done. No.
Yeah, and we came out with Poke, which we don't talk about Poke. We still talk about
Snapchat.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you just know, just because the big guys are coming out doesn't mean that they're going to. They can put them in the lots and stuff, but if the price points aren't good and the product isn't as good, you know, consumers, you know, the general principle, consumers are smart. Crowds are dumb, but the consumer is smart.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, a big thing to look at here is the fact that the what's it called? There is a good chance that Tesla won't – well, it's almost certainly that Tesla won't be the only great electric car manufacturer in the world. But the idea that there's only space for one or two and that Tesla can't, you know, continue to make waves and cause a ruckus with what they're doing is ridiculous to me. And then furthermore, so once that kind of came out that – I'm not a big believer in following stock prices as an indicator, because it's usually people that don't understand the technology that are trying to decide whether or not you should be spending your money or not. That's besides the point. That took a big hit on their stock price. But the next part about this obviously did happen, the fire. And that did hurt their stock price, because that's been a big concern. Like, what happens when one of the batteries catches on fire? And there was a lot of, like, early on, there was like, did the guy even hit debris? They couldn't find the debris that caused the puncture hole.
Huh.
Like, you know, maybe it just caught on fire on its own. You know, the whole Boeing, their airplanes were catching on fire mid-flight because of the lithium ion batteries. Like, you know, maybe this is the same thing, and
just got too hot.
And basically, eventually, like when everything kind of settled down, yeah, they absolutely found the piece of debris. It punched a hole in a quarter inch piece of aluminum, which is pretty impressive. And then they were like, and then they said, now let's take it here. Occasionally, cars are going to catch on fire. Like, wow, that's a heck of a place to start, but sure, let's start there. and they said, when a car catches on fire, you want it to do it in a safe way. And the Teslas, I guess, are designed to vent the flames from a battery, from the battery burning out around and underneath the car. That protects most of the car and most of the components and keeps it from getting too hot.
Okay.
At that point, what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to put water on it. That makes it erupt even worse in the fire, because lithium ion, you know, it's just how it goes. But you can't assume that the battery is burning every time and go directly to the retardant. So try water first. What the heck? You know, worst case scenario, it's just normal procedure. And then you're supposed to move on to the chemical retardant, and that will actually put it out. I said, the problem is, and that's supposed to be standard procedure for putting out a Tesla. The problem was is that standard procedure for the firefighter company, as I've mentioned earlier, is to punch holes in the top of the battery pack so that they can get water down to the battery pack, which is not what you're supposed to do with a Tesla, because it's already venting the fire way. And so basically what they did was they then gave it two courses of airflow, and it became this its own, like, jet engine as it's fueling its fire. So the thing just became – if you've watched the video, it is a huge fire, and it looks really odd.
Oh, they got a video of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, some dude had a YouTube thing, and they're it's great if it's, like, 30 seconds long. It's the perfect YouTube video because it's a burning car. Dude goes, oh, my gosh, that car's burning. And then as they drive by, the guy goes, oh, my gosh, it's a Tesla. And then it cuts off. It's, like, the perfect length and to cause as much damage as possible. So this car is just roaring with fire, and it's because they vented it properly so that it would burn with maximum efficiency. And Elon Musk,
firefighters, man, they're good at that kind of stuff.
I know, exactly. And Elon Musk is like basically like they did the right thing for what they were supposed to do, but it caused a giant fire, and we're just gonna have to work with fire departments to kind of figure out the best strategy. But basically, he sat down and he said like look. Cars catch on fire. If you divide the number, like hundreds of thousands of cars catch on fire every year, if you divide the number of cars by the number of miles that Americans drive, versus the cars that catch on fire, you get how many miles have to be driven before a car catches on fire. And if you take all the entire Tesla fleet, how many miles they've put on versus the one fire that's happened, you sit there and you go, it's not even in the same ballpark. The Tesla is still the safest car in the world from a fire perspective. And they said, and furthermore, this is the craziest part. Our firewall works perfectly. So despite the fact that this thing is roaring with fire, the fire never broke into the main cabin. Which means that if they had been stuck in the main cabin, the people wouldn't have died while they put the fire out. They would have been pretty uncomfortable. But they wouldn't have been burnt to death or, you know, suffocated to death, even worse, because that's nasty fumes, which is pretty cool. And so he basically said it's, like, super safe. And then I was actually here, and I heard an interview with a firefighter, and he was like, honestly, like, at least there was a reason this thing caught on fire. Like, honestly, like 3 out of 4 car fires that they respond to, this one firefighter, he's like, we just show up to somebody's, like, they had their car was parked in the driveway, and all of a sudden their car caught on fire, and we got to put it out. You know, like, he goes, cars catch on fire all the time when they're off. Like, it's not even he goes, the fact that a Tesla, at least the Tesla had an excuse. It hit a big old piece of metal and put a hole through it. But I don't know. It was interesting. Didn't help the stock price much. It really hasn't bounced back yet. But I don't know. Not what Tesla was expecting. And people really commended Elon Musk for being very transparent and taking responsibility and basically explaining, like, hey, man, this stuff happens, and we're not freaked out by it. You shouldn't be freaked out by it.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, definitely interesting, though.
Yeah, definitely indeed. So. Also definitely interesting, the Galaxy Gear got released onto the market today, this week.
This week, I saw one, not in the wild, but at a Best Buy, at a Best Buys.
Yeah, what were your impressions before we get into the other impressions?
Well, same as always, it's ugly and big and useless. And completely powered down. That was the best part, was that it was like it worked for like
powered
30 seconds
down.
Before. It worked for like 30 seconds before the battery died on it. Nice job, Best Buy. That's awesome. But it's huge. And
come
it's,
on, let us test your products.
Exactly. And he just it's terrible. This is, by the way, this is the part of the news that counts as what we expected to happen. Give me some love on the awesome Galaxy Gear.
This Kramer video here, what's that about?
Basically, Kramer said, look, this thing is dead in the water. It's over. Like, so, it was.
Yeah. So there's that. And a lot of the reviews have been, you know, this thing is dumb. What was it? What did Mac Daily News call it? The stupid watch.
Yeah.
Oh, I love their bias. But there was one review which I actually really liked. It's Anantech, which these guys – you love their blog. You should
follow them. Oh, dude, they're awesome.
Yeah, because they're super, super technical, like over the top technical.
Oh, yeah. I have a hard time keeping up with them oftentimes.
Yeah, so Brian Klug, he did his long review. Seriously, this thing took me like a half hour to read. It's unbelievable.
The iPhone 5S review was honestly a novel. Those guys write like it's nobody's business. It's crazy.
Which there's a part of me that's like, dude, respect my time and like just give me the executive summary, but that's okay.
Right.
You know, obviously they're writing for a certain type of fanboy, and we do read the entire thing, so I guess it's working. So what was cool about his review was he didn't come out and was like, yeah, this is the stupid phone or the stupid watch. You know, he didn't say that. He was like, no, let's give this a legitimate once over, which, by the way, he is a proud Pebble owner.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, so there's that bias going into it too, which in some regards, I'm like, oh, I really want to hear what this guy has to say. Cause he's like, yeah, I've owned a Pebble since it was released and I wear it all the time and I really like it. And he's like, and to the point where I've tested other smartwatches and I keep coming back to the Pebble. So you're like, all right, you know, I really like this guy. What do you got to say? You know, because I'm that target market, right? Unlike Snapchat, this is me. You know, of course, he goes, all right, well, let's deconstruct this very scientifically and let's talk about it. And so he just starts to, you know, walk through, all right, what is this thing? In his opinion, he goes, yeah, it's big, but it doesn't feel horrible. Oh, and the other thing is not only does he like Pebble, but he likes nice timepieces. You know, he enjoys to wear watches for the joy of wearing a watch. You know, and so and he's like, in some ways, he goes, it's large, but it's not as heavy as some of the high-end timepieces. He goes, in that regard, it's actually nice. Hmm. Whereas I feel like a lot of, you know, the people making these comments, like, they just don't wear watches. And
yeah, that's
and
true.
So,
true.
You know, so they put this thing on their wrist and they're like, ah, I feel like I'm in shackles. And, you know, so they're just predisposed to hate it. Yeah,
thing they got going against them hardcore is the fact that these are people who are, you know, most of us don't wear watches anymore. We're not used to it. Even if you did wear watches, it's been so long since you've worn a watch, you know.
Yeah, and now you're talking about putting a, you know, admittedly a large thing. But remember, I used to have that G-Shock watch.
Yeah.
And the thing was like, it was just like coming off my wrist like this, right?
I mean, I guess the G-Shock watch and I guess they're comparable. I feel
I remember people used to be like, oh my gosh, how do you lift your arm with that thing on it? You know, and I'd be like, you just do. I don't know. It's not a big deal. I'd be like, you don't understand. It's got an altimeter and barometer in it. That's awesome.
Which is
pretty cool.
Decade and a half old watch.
Yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, and so you're just like, see, so you deal with the weight. You do adjust to it, you know. Sure, I'm sure that's a pain. I remember being like, wow, this thing's huge. But then, like I said, eventually, it is what it is. Which I'm sure is actually the same thing with, like, large phones, right? Yeah, at first the thing's huge in your pocket, and then after a while it just is. That's the way life is. So anyways, so he was like, you know, compared to other stuff, he goes, it's actually a pretty good build. So the only really annoying part for him was they've got four screws on the face of the watch. And he's like, and in all the photos, the screws are perfectly aligned. He goes, but in my review unit, he's like, they were just every which way. He's like, and the OCD inside of me hated that every single time I looked at the watch face. He's like, just make the screws all the same.
Yeah,
Well, and he just sits there and goes, that's just one of those attention to detail things that certain companies are known for, and this one is not. But, you know, whatever. So then he goes in and he talks about it's weird. He's like, it's really not water resistant, despite what they say, because of the charging cord type thing. He's like, you can't go swimming with this watch. It just doesn't – it won't work. It'll break it. Apparently, you know. You know, because they say it's water resistant, I think, and he's like, yeah, not really. But anyways, he talks about the screen and, you know, he's like, it's fine. You know, it's a previous generation screen and it works for the purpose of it. He did say one of the interesting things about it is it's running Android 4.2 on it, and it's got like a full-blown dual system on a chip type thing with 512 megabytes of RAM, 4 gigs of internal storage, you know, that kind of stuff. He said, so you can tell that they had to do certain things to make it work. For example, in some ways it's a lot like a smartphone where when you're not using it, the screen turns off. And so it's designed so that when you, you know, using the gyroscope and motion sensors that are inside of it, when you push it, when you put it like right side up, like as if you were to look at the time, the screen is supposed to turn on. And he's like, it's cool, except for it doesn't always work.
Oh.
And you know, he's like, that's kind of annoying. And then he's like, and then there's times where you just want to glance really quick to see what it is. You know, you're in the meeting or something, and you just kind of want to nonchalantly see what time is it. He's right. And it doesn't work for that.
That's super. That would kill me. That would absolutely kill
me. Yeah. So he's like, so you have this smart watch that doesn't do this watch
smart
thing very
thing, yeah.
well. It's like, so that's kind of annoying.
That would hurt sales.
But you know, but he's like, but that's something that can be solved, where you have a persistent clock on it. It's just, you know, they're trying
right.
not to. What was the other thing? Oh, so he was. He's got like, oh my gosh, he's got so many. He's got like 5 different sections on this thing. What were some other ones? He was talking about the controls, and he's like, they're fine. They work okay. He talked about the camera, and he's like, you know, in some ways, this camera, he's like, it's actually really impressive the quality of photos that you're able to take using such a small little camera that's inside of the wristwatch.
Right.
And, you know, so he's like, so that's like, yeah, it's not great. When you think about what they're pulling off, he's like, that in and of itself is amazing. He was saying that making the phone calls with the voice and the, you know, he's like, it's essentially being on a speakerphone conversation all the time. He's like, it works as well as those do. It's obviously not the preferred form of you know, talking with people.
Right.
He goes, one of the things it does do, which I would not mind this. He says, when you get a text message, you can reply via voice to text, and so you can speak out a response, and it will text that response back to the person.
Right.
And he's like, I would love that on my Pebble. I'm like, yeah, me too. So he's like, so that's a good thing it's got going for it. That he really liked. He did say about the camera again that he's like, they've really designed this thing so that it takes a lot of pictures, in the sense that he's like, it seems like no matter where you are in the menu system, you can always get to the camera, and it feels like they, you know, so as a result, he's like, I kept pulling up the camera all the time by accident.
Oh.
Like, so that was kind of, you know, that was kind of annoying. And it's just one of those gooey fixes that have to happen. But you know, he's like, it's fine. He was talking about the battery life, and I guess it can go a day. I guess. He said he's like, I don't have an official way of testing watch batteries right now. He's like, so, you know, we'll cross that bridge eventually. But he was like, of just complete, like, just run this thing at pretty much full go. He's like, it's a little over 5 hours. He's like, but you're obviously not going to, right? When it's down on your side, it's the screen's not going to be on. And so he's like, in practice, he goes, it made it a day. With very light usage, it actually made it 2 days. You just got to get into the habit of charging it every night just like you would.
I think that's a killer. I don't think it'll work with that. I think, you know, every couple of days we've talked about this before, but I think a day is just not enough. I think you're making
I think if you had something that was super cool and awesome, you would put up with it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I would, but yeah. I don't think that's nearly cool or awesome enough. And
well,
I think
yeah,
I would
okay,
be...
you know, that's fair. But you know, if you had to charge Google Glass every day, you'd do it.
Yeah,
I mean, you'd complain about it. Don't get me wrong. But you would do it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Similar stuff. Obviously, it also is still got to be tethered to a phone in order to really work. It can't access the internet or do anything on its own. It's connected via Bluetooth. And, so his whole thing, which I think is very true, he goes, this is classic Samsung. They took a stab at it, and there's some stuff here that they do really well. There's some other stuff that, they just missed. But what's cool about Samsung is they tend to learn faster, copy fast, however you want to think about it, and iterate. And he goes, and they've got the base of something good, and they'll come out with three or four different versions, and then they'll make different generations, and they'll see what other people do, and they'll copy those, and it will just get better over time. And so he's like, at this point, I'm going back to my Pebble. I still like it more. But he's like, it's not a horrible thing. He's like, if anything, it's a proof of concept that you can buy, is how he described it. The other interesting thing here was he was saying, wearables are a hot buzzword right now, and that's putting it lightly. As the smartphone and tablet markets mature, device manufacturers are looking towards other markets to continue growth and drive shoppers. He goes, I've been coming to terms slowly with the realization that smartphones are now a mainstream thing, and we're getting increasingly close to a flat part of an S-curve, at least in the short term. And the re-emergence of wearables like the Galaxy Gear and other smartwatches just underscore it. And then I thought this was the really cool part. He goes, the reality, of course, is that there's a cycle here. And even one is nascent, or maybe not so, as the mobile space has a certain cadence. They wrote about the Samsung S9 110 watch phone when it came before the Galaxy Gear in 2009. But it looks a whole lot like it. Before that was the Samsung SPH WP10 watch phone, which included basic call capabilities. It's like, it's interesting how for some the smartwatch space seems new when in reality it isn't, but that's really just a tangential subject.
Right.
So he's like, this has been in development and has always been this, we'd like to see it space for a while, which kind of, again, coincides with my thing of like, this is the Palm Treo. We have been doing smartphones. They had been doing smartphones for a while, and they had been making leaps and bounds. And then it just had to come along where, someone really does do something genuinely breakthrough, and you go, oh, this is it.
Right.
Which, total side note, by the way, there was this note on BlackBerry, and I'll just pull it up real quick. When the iPhone first came out, Mr. Lazardus and Mr. Bastili, they belittled the iPhone, right, and its shortcomings for a short battery life, sound familiar, weaker security, and initial lack of email. But internally, he had a very different message. He said, if that thing catches on, we're competing with a Mac, not a Nokia. And, which I think is just that very telling, he got it, where he was like, no, this is a computer with the form factor of a phone. And I think you got to have something similar to that with a, with a watch, where she's like, no, this is, again, it's like a phone with the form factor of a watch or something. I don't know. But, the other thing to take note about mobile phone or watches is that in 2012, they estimated that 8.3 million wearables were sold last year.
That's a lot.
And this year, they expect... Where's that number? Oh, I'm sorry. By 2017, they expect it to grow to 64 million. Which, smartphones are at like a billion, so it's still small. But their idea is that it's still...
They're at a billion.
Yeah.
I think they're only at like 300 or 400 million, which is a big difference. I mean, one of those is only four times bigger than that market.
Well, again, this is 2017 that they're talking about.
So right. Okay.
They see smartphones to be at a billion at the time.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But anyways, and they're talking about all wearables: Google Glass, watches, jewelry, wristbands, shoes.
That seems crazy to me. I think the health stuff are really taking off, and those are gonna, you know, I don't know.
Anyways, that is a whole bunch of galaxy gear.
Yeah. So, we got a little bit of a late start, but can I do one more?
Maybe. I'm gonna do mine no matter what. So.
Okay. Well, this is the last that I said. I forgot I was there. This is the last of the expected things that are gonna happen. But HTC is finally kind of. They might be looking to merge with somebody.
Really? Shocker!
I know. See, exactly.
They're not making any money. You gotta merge.
Over and over and over again, they're not making any money, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. Microsoft has been evidently in talks with them, saying, "Hey, you should dual boot your phones with Android and Windows. They can do both or either. People can do whatever they want, man. It'll be totally awesome for you." Which I think sounds like a great way to make sure that your phone doesn't come with any additional storage space.
Yeah, seriously.
Natively. But, you know, whatever, man. They might talk
to me. Which, by the way, I have a friend who, sadly for you and I, he decided to go with the Samsung Galaxy S4.
Why is that sadly for us, not him?
Because, for me, I can't do iMessage and FaceTimes with him.
Oh, okay.
Which is what I told him. And he was like, oh, yeah.
You can do iMessages. We talked about
that. He was, right. But he, you know, he was like, oh, the salesperson said that this phone was like hands down better than any other device out there. I was like, well, your salesman lied to you, but that's okay.
Are you serious?
I know. That's what he said. But what he said was interesting.
Why would you listen to your salesman?
It's got the TouchWiz and all that stuff on it, right? Which he was like, he tried. He tried the no gesture thing and the tilting thing, and he's like, it's dumb. And so he's like, so I turned it all off. But what was interesting is he looked at his storage. 8 gigs of it was already filled up. He got a 16 gig phone and half of it just software added on top. I'm pretty sure stock Android doesn't take up that much space.
No, it doesn't at all. That's the beauty of Samsung right there. And there,
plus he had all the Verizon apps too, because you have to apparently.
Oh yeah, it's bloatware. And that's, you know, that's the quintessential bloatware. And the crazy thing is, like, honestly, like, I tried out all the cool TouchWiz nonsense that they had. It's cool enough, man. I could actually see using the tilting function to kind of scroll and stuff. It worked fine. I do like the video pauses when you look away thing. That's kind of cool. But
thing he kept.
Yeah, because it works well. It actually works very well. It's very consistent. It works quickly, and it works well in the background. Everything else, though, is kind of like, what's the point of this business? But I don't know. That's interesting.
Anyway, so HTC is Microsoft's trying to acquire them without acquiring them, is what it's
pretty much.
Like.
Yeah. And HTC is starting to
dual boot phones. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. Why would you ever
Because Microsoft
just make two versions of the phone and make people choose. Oh, whatever. You gotta love Microsoft. You know, they try for those creative solutions. We're not gonna tell you to choose this. We're just saying make it an option.
Yeah. Trust me. We're just trying to make sure you guys don't have a monopoly. We've suffered that. We're just trying to help you.
Yeah, that's exactly. crazy.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it honestly, it worked for – I think what they're doing is they sat there and then it worked for Apple. I mean, they sell tons of Macs on the premise that it'll run Windows, and then nobody ever used Windows. So if we can get people to buy it and say, I'll try it because I can always switch back to Android, and then they never will. So perfect. You know, it's like people won't switch. If you can get them to try Windows first, they won't use Android.
Oh, yeah, because most people – yeah.
And speaking of which, I bought Windows 8 for stupid cheap. I bought a full version of Windows 8 Pro for $30.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, it is.
Sounds it amazing? Do you love it?
No.
Are you just happy? Best $30 you ever spent?
I cannot get I cannot.
You gotta get
the
leap motion, man. Just spend the extra money that you save, get the leap bar, and then it'll be like it's touch, and then you'll.
Yeah, well, I use the Magic Trackpad, so it's pretty touchish. It's actually kind of cool. All right. But
wait, for your Mac?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been trying out the whole dual boot thing. But the thing is, I'm not dual booting. I'm virtualizing it using a.
Parallels or VMware?
VMware. Okay. And I can't play video games on it, which is the whole point of putting it on there was to be able to run.
Wait, why can't you play video games?
Because it's not using the it's not accessing the hardware acceleration accessing the GPU cores properly. It's just driving me crazy. So it's like you don't have a graphics card, so we can't do this. What do you mean I don't have a graphics card? You know I don't have a graphics card. I've got an integrated graphics card. Come on, guys, get up to speed with this garbage. So we're gonna work on my laptop, which has a worse GPU.
Yeah,
doesn't work on the Mac. It's just driving me nuts. So I don't know.
I believe that's where some people would say that's why Macs are dumb and Windows machines are awesome.
It's better hardware. The Mac has better hardware.
Well, yeah,
than the PC. It doesn't work as well because it's a virtual because the virtual machine doesn't access the hardware properly. Nothing to do with the Mac or Windows. Really and truly, it's VMware. You guys get your act together. I should have probably looked into this before. Jumping into the bed with it all.
$30. Now you
whatever.
Know.
Yeah. Live and learn. Then get loves.
Speaking of $30.
Yeah.
There is a certain company that's going to go public, and their initial share price may be around $30.
Yeah. I can afford $30.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to do it quick because that's the initial, and then it moves from there.
Yeah.
But Twitter... The Twitter guys, they're going public.
The Twitter machine is going public.
And they've gone public with their public plans, finally.
Nice.
Apparently, if you're asking for less than $1 billion or something, you can. You don't have to tell everybody everything right away. You can like wait 3 weeks, which is what they opted to do. Which I don't know what the benefits are of that other than less time for people to scrutinize or something. But anyways, the information is now out there about what they're planning on doing. They could raise as much as $1 billion.
Boom. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Their revenue in the first 6 months of this year was $253 million.
Okay.
Their expenses were
like $253.
Yeah, no. Their expenses were actually a little more than that.
Oh, so it was pretty close to $253 of profits.
So they're not profitable, actually. And their ticker will be TWTR, Twitter.
That's like, cool.
That's cool. That was what my thought was. There's a huge article on GigaOm where they go into everything.
They could have made a huge capital expense, right? Capital purchase, bought a bunch of servers in the last year that could have, you know...
It didn't sound like it, or they didn't say
yeah, but
it that
they,
way.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, look at Amazon, dude. How long was Amazon burning money?
Yeah,
like,
but Amazon would say that, right? Hey, we're investing, we're making stuff. Twitter didn't say that. It was just more like, we're working on it still.
Okay.
But they're on a pace where it's like, they'll be fine. It sounds like within a year, they'll be making money, so it's not
that's
a big
good.
Deal. Their market value is expected to be like $15 billion-ish, and that's a lot. They'll make a couple billionaires overnight because that's the way that stuff works. Good for them.
How do I get on that?
Yeah, it's too late.
Joined Twitter 10 years ago.
Oh. Yeah. What's actually really interesting about this is that they said that they have 215 million active users per month. 75% of them access it from a mobile device. I'm part of that. 75%. And what's also interesting, where was it, is that they previously had said, it was only a few months ago, that they had about 200 million users. Though that They're not sure if that's active users or just total users, but it seems to imply that their growth is significantly slowing down. So that could be an issue for them that they're going to have to deal with. And they actually do say that in their letter, we're dealing with flattening growth, and so for them, it's going to be about increasing engagement, not just increasing the number of users. They also say somewhere between 5% and 10% of the accounts are totally fake spam accounts. Oh. So they're dealing with that.
This is interesting. I'm going to throw this in right now because I thought this was fascinating. I was reading an article about why digital magazines won't work. And it was a Wired magazine. Basically, this guy starts off with talking about a pitch that some lady gave him about a digital magazine. And he said, 3 or 4 years ago, I would have said, that's a great idea. I probably would have even been willing to invest. Today, I don't think it's going to work. Basically, he gets into why. And one of his biggest arguments, he's got a couple of them, and they all make sense. But one of his biggest arguments against why magazines don't work is because last year, Nielsen estimated the average mobile user has 41 apps on his or her smartphone. In April, a flurry of studies showed the average smartphone user opens only 8 apps a day, with the most popular being Facebook, YouTube, and game apps. According to the 2002 report from Localists, 22% of all apps are only opened once. So long and short of this is that on average people only use 8 apps a day, which I was thinking about it when I was reading that. And if we don't include, well, I think you should include texting and phone, but,
I would.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, really and truly, every day, I'd say there's only 7 that I open. Oh, wait. 8, 9. I'd say phone, messaging, Safari, music, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, MyFitnessPal, and Fitbit. I open every single day, and that brings me up to 9. And then, and Sudoku. So 10. I do 10, but Twitter's one of them. So I think that's interesting that it's like – I think they're one of your big 8 for most people that have a Twitter account, which is pretty important. I mean, if you've only got that much attention span of people to be able to split – to be able to get a piece of that, man, that's big action. So I don't think they're a bad bet. I think it's – they've always been in a different position than Facebook. I think they've always had bigger struggles than Facebook. So where Facebook, I was very much to the point of, when it first came out, I was like, dude, the stock's going to drop. And then it's going to come because everybody was saying it was going to drop because it was way overpriced. It was designed specifically to get the angels the biggest money that they could because they're going to sell right away. Dropped. And then I said, I'd buy when it hits its bottom because it's going to come back and it's going to go beyond it. And everybody who bought at the IPO, including some of our relatives, have made their money back and more by just hanging on.
Was that you, Matt? Did you follow your own advice?
Did I buy at the low? No, I don't have any money. Are you kidding me? I didn't.
You want to remain unbiased for the podcast. I can appreciate
exactly.
That
was my goal. Really and truly, you and I are of the same cut from the same fabric on the I don't like to invest.
Same fat.
Same fabric in that I don't like to invest in single stocks. I just,
Well, that's what happens when your mom's a CFP and they teach you not to.
Yeah, ironically, she does sometimes, but.
Well,
That's fine.
Yeah, but see, hers is totally fun money. It's not investing money. And so that's different. And that's the only situation in which it's allowed.
That's true. That is very true.
The other interesting thing before we kind of totally delude ourselves is that they're looking at the letter to the shareholders that they wrote, and they said it's short. And they're like, on one hand, it's Twitter, so you would expect it to be short. Said, but more telling really is that the guys who are running it are not the founders. Unlike, say, Google and Facebook, they said with those, and probably even Apple too, way back in the day, written by the founders, it got into a lot more of the philosophical why do we exist type stuff and just explain some of those more heady topics, kind of like we were talking about earlier about Facebook. And And like with these guys, no, they're not the founders. And so they just don't quite have that same visionary type of passion about it. It really is. This is a business, and it's a good one, and we believe in the mission of it. It's just not, they didn't wake up in the middle of the night and go, we have to do this. This doesn't exist, and we have to do it, and here's why, you know? But,
yeah,
just a nice little interesting insight. I don't think that – I still think it will be very successful. I'm not trying to knock it. It's just an interesting observation about them.
Yeah.
You want to take any bets? Think the stock will – so, again, they think it will go for 28 to 30. Do you think it will pop way up right away, or do you think it will drop similar to the Book of Face?
Right. I think they're a little. They seem to be coming in a little more reasonable. I haven't really thought about it, but my instinct would be they're going to raise $1 billion. People are actually going to buy, and when people see Facebook's overall, Facebook wasn't trying to really capitalize on it, and so that was a weird situation. They weren't trying to raise money necessarily; they were paying back their investors. But it sounds like Twitter's actually trying to get $1 billion in the bank. So I think they actually positioned themselves. It sounds to me like they would have positioned themselves in a place to actually sell that much stock and not have a lot of repercussions come back to it. It sounds like they positioned themselves in a place where it is pretty cheap and it will raise in price, and they're doing it in such a, okay, long and short here is, yeah, I think it'll go up. It's not going to go up big time, I think.
Well, especially since Twitter keeps losing money. I mean,
right. Exactly. It's going to go up a bit. You could make some quick money, I think, if you were to quickish money, if you were to buy and then sell in a couple of weeks. But, you know, unless you're a big time investor throwing a lot of money into it, you're not going to double your take. You're going to get, you know, a couple 10, 20% maybe. And I think, would be my guess. Long term, over the next year, I think it'll just keep trucking up over time. You know, especially once they start getting their, getting their finances in order. If they start making money, it'll go up. So,
especially if they figure out a way to make money beyond just ads.
Exactly. Good luck with that. But that's kind of where
Welcome
I'm at.
Welcome to the internet.
All right.
They could be the communication link for the deep net.
Yeah.
Silk Road.
Yeah. So.
All right. Cool. So yeah, going public, well, obviously for obvious reasons, because obviously we obviously will. yeah, we'll keep following it. Hey, have you ever tried DuckDuckGo?
I have not, no.
Okay, me neither. That was a short segment.
We should. I don't know anything about it, but
me neither. I was hoping you did it. But you were off having fun this weekend.
Yeah, I had a crazy weekend.
You were at a Disneyland,
the
right?
The Disneyland and the San Diego Zoo.
Oh, man. The San Diego Zoo. It's a cool zoo. I've been there.
It is a cool zoo.
All right. So, that's your tech news for the week.
All right, man.
We'll have another week at it. I don't know what's happening next week, but, we'll be here telling you all about it. I think I'll be back in time. I'll obviously let you know if that changes. I
appreciate that.
Because I won't be around on the weekend. But
this is like one weekend in a really long time that I don't have any plans. I'm super stoked for it.
Dude, I love that.
Sleep.
I try to make most of my Saturdays free. That's a goal of mine.
Yeah, I would say never free Saturdays.
70% of the time I'm successful.
Yeah, I'd say 10% of the time I'm successful.
Yeah. You'll get there. You'll get there. Well, cool beans. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I am James Furlough, and my brother, who is not on furlough, Matthew Furlough. Wait, what is it? My brother, who is not on furlough, is Matthew Furlough.
There you go.
That's the English sentence. The two of us, we will talk next time. realize that it's like 11:20 at night.
Yeah.
I am totally wired, man.
That's awesome.
Not good. Oh, well, it happens.